Support for PrairiePublic is provided by BNC National Bank, offering online banking services and a secure and convenient way to bank using a mobile phone. Learn more at bnc.bank.
This is Main Street. I'm Alicia Heglin-Thorpe. It was a massive undertaking, renovating the Nome Schoolhouse into a multi-use facility, hosting weddings, corporate retreats, birding festivals, art classes, and more. Co-owner Chris Armbrust gives Main Street special contributor Brandy Malarkey a tour of the completed space, 3 years in the making, sharing the building's past, present, and future.
This is the culmination of 3 years of solid work, isn't it, Chris?
It certainly is. Yeah, we finished July 1st of last year, 2021, but we've been waiting for our elevator to say we are completely finished, and we just got the elevator in March, so now we are completely finished because we have an elevator.
3 years ago, this space was broken down, lots of open to the elements. Stairways were full of broken furniture, and now we are standing in this beautiful dining area full of tables and large windows full of light. Tell us a little bit about where you've come.
Oh my goodness, yes, we bought the school in October of 2018, and we worked just our families cleaning and getting all the debris, evicting the raccoons. We had a large number of raccoons that had decided to be hostile in here, so we had to evict them and just start, you know, cleaning up all the debris and working with architects and engineers. And then in the summer of 2019, the hammers started working, and we actually started doing the renovations. The actual work started.
Can you tell me just a little bit about this room?
The room that we are standing in here is an addition. We had to take off the two classrooms that were on the east side of the school, as they had a flat roof that had failed, and it was actually compromising the structural integrity of the remaining structure. So we had to take that down, and then that afforded us the space to put an addition on. So we did so. We added 17,000 square feet, which is this dining room space that we're standing in right now, as well as the hotel rooms, which are above here.
Well, I do know that one of the things people have really focused on is that this is really a fiber business. Both you and your partner, Teresa, both have fiber businesses, which you've moved here. You intend to offer a lot of classes and retreats. But as you just said, this is the dining space and you have a hotel. So tell us a little bit about the overall concept.
Yeah, it started with Teresa and I partnered our business, Bear Creek Felting and Dakota Fiber Mill, and we turned into Shepherd Industries. That was a reason for taking on this renovation in the beginning, and our businesses in the basement is the main focus, as well as the retreat center. Education, the Fiber Arts Retreat Center, is the other half of that, and that's why we needed the hotel rooms and the commercial kitchen and the dining space and the event space, which is in the old gymnasium, so that we could host conferences and we could have all sorts of educational offerings, which we have now started, and they are up on our website.
Well, why don't you give us just a little bit of a tour and show us a little bit more of this building?
Well, okay, we're going to start at the main entrance, and the main entrance of the original schoolhouse, and we have kept the look basically exactly the same. So when you walk into that main door, which is a replica of the original door, into that first vestibule and up the stairway, it looks exactly like it did in 1916, it just takes your breath away. And the woodwork, the floors are original. They've been taken up and relaid. All of the woodwork has been lemon oiled. Nothing else has been done to it. It was in amazing shape. The doors are all the same. Everything is the same. And even the Statue of Liberty has come back home. And that is the first thing you see as you walk up the stairs, is the Statue of Liberty, which was donated to the school in 1917, is back on her pedestal as she was sold at the decommissioning auction in 1970, and donated back. So that's pretty cool.
All of these little bits of history that I'm seeing as I look around are fabulous. Now, I don't believe, however, that the felted elephant in the fountain is one of them.
Yes, we had one of the original drinking fountains was left, and we really, really wanted to use it and make it operable as a drinking fountain, but it wasn't up to code, so we were told we could not use it as a drinking fountain, but we didn't want to remove it, so Teresa needle-felted this adorable elephant taking a bath in the drinking fountain, and his name is Anthony, and he will forever live there in his drinking fountain.
So as we go into this space...
Yep, this is the classroom that's in the northwest corner, and this was the first and second grade classroom. Pretty much looks exactly like it did at that time. We replaced the windows, the light fixtures, the floors, the chalkboards have been repainted. Everything looks exactly like it did. And we use this space as a multi-purpose space. The brides use it as a bride get ready. We use it, of course, for classroom space, just for hanging out space. It is full of memorabilia that folks have donated back to the school. And that's kind of fun to see. It's in display cases here. And we have everything from pendants to basketball uniforms to report cards and everything in between. We have a Barnes County plat book from 1928 that we found here in the school, which was kind of cool. So many letters from letterman jackets have been donated.
That looks like report cards. I'd want mine there forever.
Yes, there are report cards here. There are certainly. So if you have a mom, dad, grandma, grandpa, great grandma, grandpa that went here, you maybe could go through these report cards and find them.
One way to check up on your folks.
There you go. Okay, now if you go across the hall, we have the retail store, which was the 7th and 8th grade classroom. And there again, that is pretty much just as it was then, with the exception of antique display cases. Our merchandise that we make, the majority of it downstairs in the fiber processing mill. Teresa is the needle felting artist extraordinaire. So she does all the kit instructions, as well as all these needle felted critters that you see that are amazing. And then the mill workers that we have down in the mill, we make all of the roving, the yarn, all of these other types of felted products that we sell here are all made down in the mill. Coasters, of course, we have hand spinning roving. And as we walk up the stairs up to the top floor where the high school was housed, where the arch window that you can see, all of the arch window, and you can look down into the first vestibule of the entryway, 3/4 of that window was covered up, and then the original trophy case sat on this landing in front of the windows, so the old alumni didn't even know that that window peeked out of the floor. So when we moved the trophy case down into the hallway, the main hallway that goes into our dining room, we cut back the floor trusses and opened up, so, and then put a gorgeous chandelier here.
Well, it certainly brings a lot of light to the staircase.
Yes, it does. Yes. Okay, and then when you come up on the landing at the top of the stairs in the southwest corner, that was the 9th and 10th grade classroom, which is now our bridal suite, or one of our large suites. It has a king size bed and sitting area and a beautiful bathroom that has a beautiful mural of a class taking place in this room in 1955. So
that is one of the things that I am seeing continually, is multiple murals of the Gnome Schoolhouse throughout the years.
Yes, exactly. We're trying to do that as many places as we can. And it's really hard to find pictures that were of a high resolution back in that day to be able to blow them up that big.
Well, trying to pay homage to the history of the building that you've renovated while still taking it on a completely new direction is pretty impressive feat.
We wanted to keep everything original that we could. And it was a fight with the architects. It was a fight with the workers sometimes, because it's a lot harder to take off woodwork and put it back on than it is just to rip it off and replace it. But we wanted everything original. So it was a lot of painstaking fixing the cracked plaster rather than ripping that off and throwing up sheetrock. That type of work was done in, they were mad at us sometimes. But
I think in the end it did pay off.
Yes,
so
yes.
The top story of the schoolhouse is your various hotel rooms.
Yes, the top floor was just the high school, so the remaining hotel rooms did not exist because there was not a floor above those two other classrooms. That's where the rest of our boutique hotel is, and there's 10 rooms, and then we have the additional bridal suite up front. After this landing on the top floor, you go up 5 more steps, and that's where the principal's office was, and that is now Teresa, my business partner's studio, art studio office, inspirational space. It is absolutely amazing.
So does that mean when you send her to the principal's office, she's in trouble, or does that mean that when she calls you to her office, you're in trouble?
Probably the latter. More so than the first, yes.
All right, now we hit the restricted area.
Yes. We go down the steps from the main entrance, and we are down where the first thing you look at is the it says restricted on a beautiful glass door, and that's the mill that is behind there. And then to your left, we have, it used to be the boiler room / chemistry room, and it was used for different things throughout all the years. And we opened up the wall in between the boiler room and that chemistry room. We abated the dear boiler of all her asbestos, and now she's on display for everyone to see because she's really quite unique. She's not operable, of course, but she is on display here, and we have the original brick walls that we left, and it's just opened up. This again is a multi-purpose space. We have a big 3-bowl sink. It's used for dye classes. It's used for corporate meetings, retreat meetings, conferences, just hanging out space.
So as somebody who has a lot of friends who are artists of various kinds and are often looking for a good venue for classes or their own retreats, is this some place that they could also come, or do you restrict it to the classes that you offer?
Absolutely not. We are welcoming folks like that. We had 3 quilters. They came in and they booked 3 rooms, and we comped them the space, and they quilted for a week, and that's what we want. All the makers, we don't care what you do, if you're a stamper, if you just want to come and hang out and get away from everything, this is the place to do it at. And we welcome that, absolutely welcome that. Please, please come. We'll feed you, we'll wine and dine you. Yes.
So will you take me behind the restricted door and show me the mill?
Absolutely. All right, here we are. As we walk into the mill, the first thing you see are machines, and we have 2 massive sinks that we do all our hand washing of our wool, alpaca, the varying fibers, and this is where we wash wool, we wash all the other fibers, and we process it into yarn and roving.
Now, I know that Teresa has a farm where she keeps sheep. Is a lot of this from her farm, or is it brought in from elsewhere?
All of our products, whether it's all the felted products, the yarn, the roving, the kits, everything that we sell is from those sheep. Right now, I think with her lambs this year, she's up over 400, I believe, right now. And that's what we wash. That's what we process down here. And it lasts us about a year. And then, you know, of course, we shear them again, and then the process starts all over again. So, yes.
400 sheep's worth of yarn that lasts about a year. You can't sell just that in North Dakota.
No, no. We sell it all over the world. We have an online business. Teresa has done an amazing job with genetics of her flock, and she has produced this most amazing needle felting wool that is sought after across the world. I mean, you take a fine wool like Merino, that doesn't make a good needle felting wool, whereas the Cormo and the Romney, mainly the Romney that she has crossbred with a few different breeds, and she has, it is just the absolute best needle felting wool, and folks from all over the world source it and buy it.
Let's go look at the blue stuff.
This is Mariella, and she's one of our gals down here, and she's currently carting a beautiful blue blend of wool into roving.
Yeah, I'm seeing what looks like blue clouds, and you are putting them on what looks like a conveyor belt. Mm-hmm. And then there's a lot of tubes going very fast. What is this, and how does it work?
It's what it's actually doing is it's aligning the fibers. It's combing it. All those tubes, as you call them, that are turning around, they have millions of little teeth sharp little teeth that comb the fiber, and when it kicks out on this end, you can see it's in like a rope form, and all the fibers are going in the same direction, and that's called roving. And this is what hand spinners use to spin, or we will continue it in the process, and we will spin it into yarn, but for the most part, this is the product that we produce for the kits and to sell, and we dye it here as well.
Yes, as it comes out the other side, it looks like it's the cotton gauze that people use for spider webs at Halloween time, only blue, and then it turns into what looks like strings of blue cotton candy on the other end.
And then back here, this is the rest of the equipment that you see here is used to spin, to take that and then to spin it into yarn from there. Now, I just finished a big bunch of yarn. So that'll be going on next is another batch of yarn after this blue. And then we like to keep all the machines going at the same time. But I knew this interview was coming. So it takes more than just one gal generally to have all the machines running. So when I'm back here this afternoon, we'll fire the rest of them up. And this is like some yarns right here. Here, you can feel this. This is alpaca. See how soft that is? And then this is wool. Still soft, but just a little different.
A little, it's got more of a catch to it. Now,
yeah.
Is that what's helpful for the felting?
Yep. Whereas if you see how much longer, this wool has like a memory where it's got like a built-in elastic almost. It's got some spring in there, whereas the alpaca is real drapey, and it just hangs so nice. And it doesn't, this is 100% alpaca, so it doesn't have the memory that wool does. So you don't want to knit a sweater generally with 100% alpaca because it's going to lose its form. The sleeves will grow and it'll stretch out, whereas with the wool, then it'll, you know, go back into shape. And now we are in the entrance that takes us out to the courtyard. You're kind of tucked in between the gym and the addition of the school and the barn. And it's just this beautiful, cozy area. And then you turn around, and here we have the elevator. We are completely handicap accessible. All the floors are serviced by our beautiful elevator.
So the elevator is the official, we are open for business, even though you were open for business prior.
Correct. We waited almost an extra year for that because, you know, sourcing parts and whatnot was an issue. They couldn't get some parts, but now we have it. So.
So as we come to one of the final spaces in the building, we are in what used to be the old gym. And this is one of the places that makes the event center part work. Tell us about these colors and waves on the wall. We've got blue and orange and brown, and it looks woven.
Yes, and it is woven. We have hundreds of pounds of wool roving that we wove into the south wall of the gymnasium, and it helps with the sound in here. As well as we also bricked all the way up probably the first, what does it look, first 7 feet. We put thin brick over the cinder block walls that were there, so it blends in with the original outside brick wall of the school. And we opened up that wall, and you can see the original outside brick wall of the school because the gymnasium was added in 1949, and it is just an amazing multi-purpose use space. We do trade shows here. We do weddings, we do conferences, we do family reunions, you name it, we've done it so far, and we're just getting going. And then we added a catering kitchen as well as a bar and a bathroom and a coat room. And then above that, we call it the upper mezzanine. We relocated the original fire escape that's how you access the area above the bar and the catering kitchen, and there's additional seating up there for 34 folks, and it's a really neat view.
So now that you've been open, and with fiber being the main focus, and we know you've had lots of weddings and corporate events here too, which is wonderful, but let's talk a little bit about your actual fiber offerings. I know that you and Teresa, as the Gnome School House, received an American Rescue Plan grant recently that was given through the North Dakota Council of Arts. Tell us a little bit about what that has helped fund.
Oh, that. We have a nonprofit here on site, and it's called the Nome University, EWE University, like the female sheep. And that provides all the educational offerings that we offer from the school. And what that grant afforded us to do, which one of the main thing, which was really neat, is a second and third grade classes from Enderlin. They came and they were reading a book called The Goat in the Rug. They brought all their students and some parents and the teachers in, and what that children's book talked about was this gal had this pet goat, and she sheared it, and how she went through the steps of processing that goat hair, which is called mohair, into an amazing rug, and it's kind of narrated by the goat itself. So it's pretty cute. And so it was neat to get those students in here and to show them what actual mohair looks like. They got to go home with a little bit of it. We showed them the entire process. We showed them how to weave. We gave them a little bit of roving to go home with as well. And that was amazing. So we're hoping to do even more of those type of educational offerings in the future, and that is what the nonprofit does. That's what all the educational offerings go through that nonprofit, whether it's the Taste of Fiber retreat that we did here, where everyone got a little bit of taste of how to felt and how to knit and how to crochet and all the fiber arts. We have spinning. We offer, of course, needle felting, quilting retreats, rug hooking, classes, day classes, week classes, and they're all on the gnomeuniversity.org website, and you can partake of them. And like I said, if you are a teacher, if you just want to come and hang out here, use the space yourself, you are more than welcome to. We welcome any makers.
So after 3 years of solid construction, you've now had a year of being able to actually put things into action. Mm-hmm. What would you say you've really learned this last year of being open and doing these things and putting your vision into practice?
It's been absolutely amazing because the vision we had, which so many didn't see, so many didn't understand. I mean, we saw the school finished in the whole 3 years as we were going through. We were way ahead. We were already planning our classes and so on and so forth. And everybody, we were called crazy. We were told we didn't know what we were doing. So it's to see it come to fruition like this and to have folks come from the state of Washington, Michigan, Florida, all over, they've come. We pick them up at the airport and they don't want to leave, and they can hardly wait to book their next stay here. It's like, oh my goodness, they love it. They all love it as much as we do. Everyone who has come to anything wants to come back. They feel the peace and it's just an amazing place that you have to come experience. And once you do, you will want to come back.
You clearly have a lot more ideas zinging around in your head. So tell us a little bit of what you are hoping to tackle next.
Oh, yes, we do. And what we are focusing this year on is our Animal Education Center. It's a big old barn out back, which was moved in by the gentleman who bought the school in 1970. As well as fixing bulldozers, he raised Percheron horses. So he moved this big old barn from Fingal here. And it's sound. It just needs a little TLC to get it up to snuff, and that will be the Animal Education Center. And we are going to have a fiber herd on site of camel, alpacas, llamas, goats, variety of breeds of sheep, and folks can come, they can meet the animals up close and personal. We're going to do animal care clinics. We're going to educate folks on how fiber is grown, what the different wools look like on the actual animal, how they are harvested on all these different animals, and it doesn't hurt any of them and helps them all. It's our most requested component that is currently missing, and that's what we are funding for right now, is to get that education herd on site here.
Thank you so much for taking the time to show us the space and visit with us today.
Oh, it's my honor. Thank you for coming out.
That was Chris Armbrust, co-owner of the Nome Schoolhouse Retreat and Event Center, with special contributor Brandy Malarkey. You can check out their offerings on their website at gnomeschoolhouse.com. This is part of Brandy's series on American Rescue Grant recipients. The money comes from federal COVID relief funding distributed through the North Dakota Council of the Arts. You can find their pieces on our website.
When you hear arts programming here on Prairie Public, know that it is supported in part by the North Dakota Council on the Arts, and we thank them.
Coming up next on Main Street, it's Main Street Eats with Sue Balcom. But first, this news.
For Prairie Public, I'm Danielle Webster. For the second week running, North Dakota is showing no signs of drought. North Dakota State climatologist Adnan Akhuz says the extreme northwest and southwest corners of the state had been the last areas experiencing abnormally dry conditions. Akhuz says the changes mark the end of a dry cycle that started in May of 2020. He says while the change has been given renewed optimism for farmers and ranchers in the state, we are not far removed from the possibility of sliding back into dry conditions.
We could, especially with the sun being so high, 65 degrees above the horizon every day, and the summertime temperatures, especially the type of temperatures that we had last Saturday, Sunday, and perhaps what's going to happen today. We've been pushing record high temperatures and the windy conditions, and the wind has to be considered, too. It dries up pretty quickly.
Akhuz says we have good subsoil moisture, and given timely rains to recharge topsoil, this could be a good growing season. July 1st is the next scheduled hearing date for a pair of lawsuits tied to North Dakota's redistricting process. The legal issue is political boundaries for tribal areas and whether their federal rights are being honored. Here's Mike Moan.
One of the lawsuits alleges the state violated the Voting Rights Act by not creating a majority Native American legislative district for the Spirit Lake and Turtle Mountain reservations. The other case seeks to protect a newly created subdistrict encompassing the Fort Berthold Reservation. Attorney Michael Carter of the Native American Rights Fund feels the law is on their side, noting recent federal activity in the first case.
The U.S. Department of Justice filed a statement of interest in the case, taking our position against the state.
The position is that a section of the Voting Rights Act has afforded citizens the ability to assert their legal rights in these situations. The state disagrees and has sought to dismiss the case filed by tribal nations. The competing suit, brought by GOP officials, argues it was unconstitutional for the state to consider race when creating the subdistrict for Fort Berthold. I'm Mike Moan.
And the new president of the North Dakota Corn Growers Association says he's cautiously optimistic about this year's growing season. Andrew Mauch will begin his term on July 1st. He says he is humbled to move forward in his new role and says the last couple of years have been challenging and this year is no different.
I would say right where I'm at in our area, we were able to get in some fields in decent conditions and earlier. Some are not, and I would say, you know, in general, probably 80% planted, you know, but it's cautiously optimistic, I would say, is a good way to put it, because it's, you know, things were just not put in good, very good conditions. So that stuff, actually right now, some of that stuff looks pretty dang good, but it's, I'm kind of curious to see how it's going to fare in the end when it comes to harvest season, if that's actually going to tail off and not come to fruition what we'd like, or if it wouldn't, you know, get some timely rains and keep the rains coming is kind of what we usually fight, not getting the rains when we need it. And so it's cautiously optimistic, I think, is the right way to put it.
Malk is a fourth generation farmer from Morton, North Dakota. He grows corn, soybeans, navy beans and sugar beets with his father and brother. For Prairie Public, I'm Danielle Webster.
With producers back in the fields operating large equipment this growing season, North Dakota's electric cooperatives remind you to watch for electric hazards. Overhead power lines are necessary to deliver electricity to hardworking farmers and ranchers, but those same power lines can also be deadly if not treated with respect. Use a spotter when operating large machinery near power lines, keep equipment at least 10 feet from power lines in all directions at all times, and consider down power lines energized. Be safe, be watchful. This message is brought to you by North Dakota's Electric Cooperatives and this station.
I'm Alicia Hagelin-Thorpe, and this is Main Street Eats. We're joined by root seller Sue Balcom and Ashley Thornburg, and June is a dairy month.
Ta-da!
Ta-da!
This is Ashley and I's favorite topic because
we get to talk about ice cream.
Ice cream! And you know what? There's a dairy farm south of town that has this breakfast on Dairy Day, whenever they declare that in June. And I think it's probably coming up here must be about the third week in June that they do this. Sometimes it fluctuates. But what they do is they serve breakfast out there on the farm at like 7 a.m. and it's pancakes with ice cream and strawberries on top.
Perfect.
It's the
three perfect things.
Oh my gosh. It's the first time I ever had it was out there, and I'm thinking, whoever thinks that ice cream is not breakfast food is way off base.
I did used to always order what was called a banana split waffle when I would go to this one specific restaurant near my parents' place.
And it would have ice cream on it? Seriously?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Bananas and
that's awesome.
Yeah, super healthy.
Well, ice cream, you know, I know people eat ice cream on oatmeal, like you cook oatmeal. Like Irish oatmeal is my favorite with some nuts and all, raisins and stuff in there. And then a scoop of ice cream on top. I mean, what's not to love about dairy? There's calcium and vitamin D. It's good for strong bones and teeth. You're supporting local business. You know, there used to be so many dairy farmers in this state. Mm-hmm. And there were bulk trucks that would drive around and pick up this milk and take it to Cass Clay and Fargo, Moorhead area, or there's a couple creameries that used to be here. And we had a creamery in Gackle when I was there growing up in high school in the 70s. And you'd go in their big shiny tanks and they would make butter. And the difference between that butter then and butter now, Kerrygold is probably the closest that you can get to real butter anymore. And I bake a lot of bread, and I had a friend say, well, of course, you need something to carry butter to your mouth with. So we celebrate Dairy Month in June. It started in 1937 because grocers got together for what they called National Milk Month, and it was a way to distribute this extra milk that these people would collect in the 30s before electricity, which meant no refrigeration. So they wanted to get rid of this extra milk during the warm months because they couldn't store it anywhere. So they decided to have Dairy Month. But, you know, building off of milk, you've got cream, you've got butter, you've got ice cream. Cheese. Oh, my gosh. Let's not forget the cheese.
That's where I pop in. Cheese.
Oh, my gosh. Jesus. Yeah. Ooh. So question number one for you ladies today. America's favorite ice cream flavor is?
Vanilla.
Chocolate.
It's vanilla.
What?
I know. Can you believe that? You know why I like vanilla ice cream? Because you can add whatever you want to it, like chocolate.
My son informed me of this not too long ago, that is every ice cream flavor that's made starts with vanilla except for chocolate.
Oh, my gosh. That's an interesting fact.
Well, I like to eat French ice cream, and that tends to have more
egg yolks, right?
Yeah, egg yolks. Yep, and I think gelato is similar. Where there's almost more of like a custardy sort of consistency to
it. Yes, that's what I like. I like that consistency.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you know, when we were kids, we did not have gargantuan, better than the Joneses birthday parties. We got angel food cake and homemade ice cream.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Not always, but the reason is because to make the ice cream, you needed the egg yolks, and to make the angel food cake, you need the egg whites. So it was the perfect combination.
Sure it was.
So
I did Google the gelato thing. More milk, less cream, and actually doesn't use egg yolks. So forget what I said about
egg yolks. Forget what you said. Well, sorry. Gelato is still pretty good, but I think a real rich ice cream, custardy ice cream, is the best. Now, there's something that happens when you eat ice cream, and it's hot out, and it's cold in your mouth, and it's called brain freeze.
Mm.
However, the technical scientific term for that has 32 letters in it. It's phenylpeptidine ganglionorrhagia, something like that.
Whoa. Short for brain freeze.
Brain freeze, right. And I have learned that, and I hate brain freeze. Oh, my goodness. Just like, it's awful. That if you put your tongue on the top of your mouth, the roof of your mouth, that will help it dissipate faster.
Mm-hmm.
And so the next time that happens, or your kids have brain freeze, you can tell them, you get their tongue on the roof of their mouth. mouth. Frozen headache. Oofta.
Yeah, it looks like sphenopalatine ganglioneuralgia.
Yeah, ooh. Good luck with that. Hey, where's our Siri?
I know, right?
Pronounce it for us, baby.
Brain freeze.
Good one. Good one, Alicia. I love it. So while we buy milk in gallons, farmers measure milk in pounds. And I don't know if it weighs the same as water, but I know that a gallon of water weighs 8 pounds. Is that, do I have that right? So I don't know if milk and water weigh the same, but I was told this by a doctor who said I shouldn't be carrying around all this water that I carry around. And I'm like, yeah, but if you got a gallon in each hand, you know, you're balanced. So, and it's better than putting it on your head. I've never figured out how those women can carry those jugs of water on their heads. Anyway, back to cheese. Anyway, there is a state that specializes in Limburger cheese. Do you guys know what that would be?
Wisconsin.
Doggone it. She knows her cheese over
Wisconsin.
Here. Huh? It's the only state that produces Limburger cheese.
Hmm.
I don't think I've ever eaten Limburger. Have you guys?
I don't even know what it is.
Oh, it's a nasty,
it's one of the
smelly cheese.
Ones, right? Yeah.
There you go.
And I love blue cheese. Like, oh, good gorgonzola salad dressing. Oh, to die for. But Limburger, well, I suppose that would be with those Norwegian lutefisks people, right? Are there a lot of Norwegians in Wisconsin?
I don't know.
So,
Siri says,
I think it's a lot of Germans because there's a lot of beer there.
Oh, yeah, you're probably right there. And they say if your name ends with E-R, you're for sure a German. So maybe Limburger is actually a German cheese. We'll have to do some research on that.
I'm Googling it right now.
Oh, God, you and your... That's not fair that
I
she
sit in front
Google.
Of the computer when we record. It originated in a French-speaking Belgian province of Liège.
Chocolate and Limburger.
Well, I have a question then. You know, because I used to eat a lot of dairy when I was younger, and now that I'm getting older, I've noticed that there's kind of a difference on how...
Doesn't like you back.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, I can eat frozen yogurt and be fine, but I can't have ice cream. And so I've also noticed the switch with when I have regular milk compared to something that has the different enzyme, like an A2 milk, where my body can digest that better because there's a protein. There's a protein difference in
the
that
milk. Magic word would be the fermentation or that enzyme, that gut bacteria thing. Yogurt has that. Milk doesn't because yogurt's been fermented, kind of. You know, it's been warmed up and it works better when you have raw milk. And so that's, and the A2 comes from a different cow than your regular raw milk does. So it has different enzymes in it. That's what's happening in your body. My son,
but it still doesn't mean that we can't enjoy Dairy Month. It's just, we have to find
the different dairy products.
Yeah.
Right. Do you like coconut? Because coconut is a lovely alternative to dairy for ice cream.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do you make your ice cream with coconut milk?
I sometimes do,
Because that, I got to try. I actually have some, and I love coconut. Like
coconut. I like the fastest ice cream that I make is a can of coconut milk, a banana, and some ginger, cinnamon, whatever I happen to have. Put it in the blender and then toss it in the ice cream maker. Like when this is I need some ice cream right now.
Well,
that's my go-to.
And you eat really weird ice cream. Like you and I should. Oh my god,
she totally owns it. I do.
Let's do a Kickstarter and get some money together so that you and I can go on an ice cream tour, and then we can come back to this program and report on the multiple types of ice creams out there. And we will have sampled them all. You showed me a picture of a Grey Poupon. Have you tried it yet?
I haven't tried that one. I ate the pizza one, though.
I just can't imagine why anybody would screw up ice cream and pizza by putting them together in the same carton.
You know, there is a lot of just because you can doesn't mean you should. But this is, you know, I would say it did not taste like pizza at all. It had, as you know, tomatoes are actually quite sweet.
And they are fruit, technically,
yeah,
fruit.
Yeah, and a reduced tomato, specifically with a little bit of sugar, does show up in some sweets here and there. So it was that, and then it was like a mozzarella cheese powder, and then it had that in the ice cream, and it didn't taste like pizza at all. Like, I wouldn't pick this up and say, "Oh, it tastes like pizza."
But it's a good thing you can't see our faces right now.
I know. Well, so here's my thing: is I've become quite known for eating a lot of ice cream.
Mm-hmm.
And I made this rule up on family vacation some years ago that was, if it's a flavor I've never had, I have to try it. And for a while, it was actually increasingly difficult. Now they have come out with some flavors that I'm like, I don't know. But that, like, people still just keep bringing me the strangest ice cream flavors. They just, like, legit show up at my house sometimes.
Sort of like home milk delivery. Like, you've got a little container
and people
outside
just are
your
like,
door.
This is weird. Maybe Ashley will eat it.
Hey, Ashley, she
likes
it.
Yeah, right. Exactly. But it was, yeah, it was a really creamy ice cream, and it was double the eggs because it was a more of a French style. So I did enjoy that. I didn't actually care for the tomato in it, but the cheese powder, like, it kind of reminded me, not exactly of like a ricotta pound cake, but you know how that doesn't taste like cheese, even
right.
though ricotta is a cheese. And you do see a lot of different kinds of softer cheeses in certain desserts, and so it had sort of a similar profile to that. But I could have done without the tomatoes in the ice cream.
And fruit and cheese, you know, that's one of our suppers in the summertime. You know, we have cut up vegetables and fruit, and then we eat cheese slices.
I know people
slices.
Who put cheddar cheese on apple pie.
Yes, I have heard that. Now, I don't think I've ever tried that, but it sounds really good because I love apples and cheese together.
Yeah. That's a really common snack.
Yep. And so The Edam
okay.
cheese.
Oh, yeah.
They made those in balls, shaped them in balls, because to export that, they wanted to be able to roll it down a ship's plank.
Mm.
You know, and I remember my brother was in the service over in Germany and brought home Gouda, which is one of my favorites. It was a wheel of Gouda. I don't know how he got it here.
I think there's a cheese rolling contest in you know, I think it's in Wisconsin.
Ask Google.
I'm going
to
Google
it. It has to be in Wisconsin. But this thing was enormous.
No, England. I was super close.
England.
I mean,
they might also do it in Wisconsin.
But there's one.
You know, there's one cheese out there that I've never been able to compare to. And that is the government-issued cheese block. I'm telling you, there's something amazing about it. It's probably not even real cheese. You're probably right.
Okay, but I'm going to tell you this. When I was
issued by the USDA.
Yes, when I was a newlywed, my husband was a social worker over in Morton County.
We called it commodity cheese.
Right.
It was commodity cheese.
I've eaten a lot of commodity cheese and macaroni because there were some people that apparently couldn't make macaroni and cheese out of that cheese and that macaroni, so they would have extra, and then once in a while he would bring some home. And back then, when I didn't have a lot of grocery money, I really, really appreciated that cheese. And it's not like Velveeta. It is not like that at all.
No, it's not.
And homemade macaroni and cheese needs a softer cheese like that, you know. I really like hard cheeses, you know, like fresh Parmesan, but I like fresh mozzarella with tomatoes and basil.
Well, for the record, my cheese tastes have improved, but
thank goodness.
But that was always a comfort food for me growing up. It was. It really was.
Yeah.
My husband still buys Velveeta, and I'm like,
I can't do Velveeta.
Do you get that this doesn't have to be refrigerated?
Does it put olives on it?
Hey, that's not
funny. I know that's Cheese Whiz.
Right, and I went on a food tour, get a load of this, in Savannah, Georgia, and every cocktail party we went to had white bread with the crusts trimmed and Cheese Whiz and green olives poked into it. I'm not kidding you. To them, that's an hors d'oeuvre. Like, every party we went to had that.
I have seen that served on cinnamon raisin bread.
Interesting.
Ew. Okay. Yeah. More faces.
Nope, not doing it.
Not doing it either. There's better things like peanut butter you can put on cinnamon raisin bread, right? And so we all know about, okay, I'm going to fess up here. We buy our milk straight from the cow. We own part of a cow. And so every week I go on Wednesdays and pick up my milk. And it's amazing the difference in unpasteurized milk. I use it mostly for cooking. You know, for making curds and whey, which is allowing it to sit on the counter and separate. And then you have whey, which has tons of protein in it that you can use as a substitute for water when you're making bread if you want. It'll add a depth, another note to your bread. And then, of course, the curds, that's what I use when I make Käsenäpfle. And they're it's hard to find dry curd cottage cheese, but it's very similar to that. But our pastor told us that in the Middle East, if you were a guest, if you got the whey, you were a guest. But if you got the curds and the whey after a long trip, you were a very special guest. Mm. But the stuff is quite sour. But, you know, it takes forever for it to get bad. Like, it just doesn't get moldy. Like, when I used to do a lot of classes in making your own cheese for Käsenäpfle or making sourdough bread or something, I would bring a pint of raw milk that had been sitting on my counter for weeks and having people smell it, and it still smelled wonderful compared to other milk that the enzymes have been kind of eradicated from. And for safety purposes, yes, you have to be careful about using raw milk, but once it's been properly cooked or pasteurized, which is something that my mom used to do when she'd get milk from the farm, she would heat it to probably 180, and you hold that for, I think, an hour, and then that kills off a lot of the bad germs and things like that.
Well, I know there are certain cheeses that customs won't let you take back to the U.S. if you're in Europe, right, because they're using raw milk to make the cheese.
But it wouldn't taste the same.
We don't do that with the USDA. So.
Right, and you can't use a pasteurized cheese to make mozzarella or anything at home. You need to do the... But you just, do a little research on it. I think somebody told me once that Mayo Clinic was actually started as something called a raw milk clinic because there are things that you need from that milk and good enzymes and things like that. But too much of a good thing is not good either. So I'm just saying that this is something I do. I wouldn't recommend it for everybody. But when I'm making ice cream and I get real cream instead of cream that's had ascorbic acid or that thickener that they use. I don't even remember what it's called. It reacts differently. So, but I'm very careful about who I serve these things to, because if you're not used to the bacteria, it can be harmful.
Yeah. So. Well, and then there are a lot of rules about how to get raw milk, if it's even legal where you live. So just make sure that anybody who might be interested in experimenting with that, like sometimes you have to go direct to the farmer, and it's not necessarily something that you can...
Right. You're not buying it off the shelves here. Mm-hmm. But I think you can in Wisconsin. There's a couple states where you can. Pennsylvania. I'm sorry, not Wisconsin. Pennsylvania allows.
Why do we just think everything's in Wisconsin all of a sudden?
Because we're thinking
because we're talking about cheese.
And, you know, there used to be like so many dairy farmers around here. It's gotten to be such a difficult profession or a difficult way to make a living because, you know, like when I grew up, we always scheduled weddings and baptisms and family dinners before or after milking because you had to be there to take care of those cows. So my final comment about milk is salute the people who are still dairy farmers because it's not an easy profession to be in anymore. So hats off to milk, because what would we do without ice cream, right, girls?
That's right. This is Main Street Eats, and we are celebrating Dairy Month. Challenge yourself, try a new dairy product, and just enjoy it. Thank you so much, Sue Balcom, with joining us on Main Street Eats.
Thank you.
Support for Prairie Public is provided by the Bush Foundation. introducing the recipients of the 2022 Bush Fellowship. Learn more about the 2022 Bush Fellows at bushfoundation.org/fellows. And by Otto Bremer Trust, investing in people, places, and opportunities in North Dakota, Montana, Minnesota, and Wisconsin. Learn more at ottobremer.org.
This is Dakota Datebook for June 23rd. On this date in 1923, an article in the Bismarck Tribune invited the Ford family to compete for prizes in a special event. Although Ford Day would include a special greeting from Henry Ford, the Ford family referred to meant Ford vehicle owners. The sponsor, Copeland Motor Company, would be giving a free touring car to one lucky registrant. The article touted band music, novel stunts, and beautifully decorated cars. A parade would conclude at the Capitol grounds with a picnic lunch provided. The paper reported that women and children would be allowed to use a restroom at the Copeland Motor Company, and the Masonic Temple would bend their rules to allow women and children in their restroom as well. More than 1,000 people registered for the parade, giving them a chance to win the free car. George Schmidt was the lucky recipient. Judges also chose winners in several other categories. Charles Snyder of Minocan won 5 gallons of oil for having the oldest Ford, a 1910 model. Hans Hansen of Linton won an oil gauge for the best-looking Ford, old style, which included models up to 1917. For best-looking new style, with models from 1918 through 1923, E.E. Vesperman won an oiling system. John Risch received a windshield wiper for having the most passengers, 12 in all, and Ed Smith won a gas pedal assembly called a Williams foot feed for bringing his family of 9 to town, the largest family in the parade. A.M. Brazerol received new seat covers for the best decorated coupe, and W.A. Smith of Moffitt received an automatic windshield wiper for the best decorated sedan. 26 participating trucks were given a free fill of gas and oil for their return trip home. Of those bringing farm products, Alfred Ryberg won 5 gallons of oil for the highest sales. L.H. Knowles of Wing also won 5 gallons of oil for traveling the longest distance. Charles Snyder, owner of the 1910 model, was about to be given a prize for the oldest driver at age 67, when Jerry Sweeney of McKenzie stepped up to say he was 72 and thus won a luggage carrier. But Snyder did win another prize, a master timer, for having the most ramshackle Ford in the parade. Today's Dakota Datebook was written by Mary Helm. I'm Bill Thomas.
Dakota Datebook is produced in cooperation with the State Historical Society of North Dakota, with funding by Humanities North Dakota, North Dakota's largest lifelong learning community.
Support for Prairie Public is provided by the Alzheimer's Association, here for you and the 15,000 people in North Dakota living with Alzheimer's, providing support groups, family care consultations, community classes, and a 24/7 helpline. Learn more at alz.org.
That's all for today's show. Tomorrow on Main Street, Atypical Brewery and Barrel Works in Minot took home the gold in a recent beer competition. We'll visit with the co-owners. And Matt Olean joins us for a new movie review of Lightyear. That's tomorrow on Main Street. Join us at 3 and 7 Central. I'm Alicia Heglin-Thorpe. Thanks for listening.